Welcome to a Monday episode of the Soccer Central Podcast. I'm John Molinaro, Chief Football Reporter for Sportsnet. Hope you all had a lovely Easter weekend. It's another busy week ahead as the Premier League race heats up and David Moyes appears to be on his way out at Manchester United. Soccer Central host James Sherman will be by later in the show to discuss that. But first, the UEFA Champions League returns this week with the first leg of the semifinals. Here to preview the slate of European games is Bobby McMahon, noted soccer pundit, regular columnist for Forbes, and a regular guest on the Soccer Central television show. Mr. McMahon, how are you?
I'm doing very well, John. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Good.
So when you look at the two semifinals in the Champions League, which one intrigues you more, Atletico versus Chelsea or Real versus Bayern?
I think I'm going to go for the former rather than the latter. I think I'll go for Atletico and Chelsea. I think there's so many side stories to this one. You've got, obviously, the fact that Mourinho was in Spain last year, the fact that Atletico beat them in the Copa del Rey final at the Bernabeu. You've got Atletico revival under Diego Simeone. You've got a real contrast in how both the teams have been built in terms of Chelsea down the years, over the last 10 years, where Abramovich's riches have been able to spend money quite freely. You certainly couldn't say that the same about Atletico, as they've been able to find a way of turning over players, but keep on finding replacements, and under Simeone, go to heights that they really haven't been at for probably 15, 16, 17 years. So you've got all these things kind of rolled into, and to maybe the biggest one, the lot, is the similarity between what Simeone's been able to do at Atletico and what Mourinho did with Porto way back in 2003-2004, winning the UEFA Cup in 2003 and then winning the Champions League the year after. I see great similarities between, probably more similarities between that Porto team and Atletico Madrid than I would see with today's Chelsea or even any other teams at Mourinho's course like Inter or Real Madrid with Atletico Madrid.
And you mentioned storylines, and you know we've barely scratched the surface there because there's also the whole issue about Courtois.
Yep.
And how committed he'll play against his parent club. I think that's a bunch of nonsense. But,
yes, I would agree.
But that's out there. And then the whole issue of Fernando Torres coming back home, really, in a sense, and whether he'll be able to perform in front of his former loyal faithful followers.
Yeah, I guess the other thing is, does he get a chance to perform in front of his former loyal fans? The continued struggle that the Chelsea strikers have had this year. Demba Ba was the man that turned the trick against PSG, and Samuel Eto'o has done it on a couple of other occasions this year. But Torres, unfortunately, you watch Fernando Torres at Chelsea, and it's really very difficult to remember that's the same player that absolutely terrorised defences.
Mm-hmm.
During his time with Liverpool. He is just such a completely different player. He is so devoid of confidence. He's fighting the ball whenever it reaches him. The closer he gets to goal, the more nervous he becomes. And even the few times over the last couple of years where he looks like it might be coming good, it's really turned out to be a false dawn for him. He's never been able to maintain. With every goal, we've asked the question, is this Fernando Torres beginning to return to his former form? But the answer to that one has always come up a big no. And you think he's now 30. And let's face it, with exception probably Didier Drogba, who didn't have a lot of mileage on his legs because he was a relatively late developer and a late starter. You don't find too many strikers that get better after the age of 30. It becomes a real struggle to maintain that sharpness. And so whether Torres stays at Chelsea or whether he moves on someplace else, it's I think we have to face up to the fact, what seems to be the fact anyway, that we're not going to see the Fernando Torres of the Liverpool years again.
What have you made, you touched on it before and about how Atletico have kind of built this team up, you know, in stark contrast to how Chelsea has done it. What have you made of Atletico's incredible rise this season? Because it is quite a story. I mean, it'd be one thing if they just made it to the semifinals of the Champions League, but they're also, you know, poised to win La Liga as well. You know, it really is a stunning story, isn't it?
It is, and you layer that on top of, as mentioned, the Copa del Rey win last year.
Right.
And the year before the Europa League win as well. So this isn't a flash in the pan. I think we have a tendency, particularly to begin the season, where we see a team that we don't regard as being one of the consistently big teams in Europe, maybe off to a good start, and we're kind of going, yeah, it's good, but will they hang in? You look at Atletico. Atletico have been a factor in Spain, certainly for the last 2 years, probably really more like the last 3 years. So you've got to give them they're not a flash in the pan. Diego Simeone has obviously gone about building this team in a very committed kind of way, defensively. And this is something we've very, very rarely said about Atletico Madrid over the last 10, 15 years. Defensively, they are incredibly strong. They're a team that we've been used to seeing scoring goals and maybe having successful strikers who many teams have looked at, like Aguero, Forlan, Falcao, have gone on to bigger teams. But to actually put that defensive resilience in place, that's how Simeone is built. And he's built it on the back of players that in many ways have been cast off from other teams. The number of players you go through, you look at, you mentioned Courtois picked up as a 90-year-old from Chelsea on loan, now in his third season there. Juan Fran has kind of been a consistent, inconsistent defender for many years. He's sitting there at right back, beginning to having another very, very good season under Simeone. Miranda, we don't really, hadn't heard very much about. Godin was with Villarreal. Felipe, the left back, who is on track to be a really, really impressive fullback a few years ago at Deportivo before he suffered a very bad injury. He's resurrected his career. And then you look through the midfield, Garcia, Gabi, both players that many had thought that weren't really cut out to play for a top team. And then the ultimate is up front, Diego Costa. This is a guy that he's on his, when you include the loan deals, he's on his eighth team. And he's still only 25. In the last 2 years, he's been absolutely sensational, and particularly this year. He has very much been the story in Spain.
Atletico's received good news this week with the return of Arda Turan. The Turkey international has been sidelined by a groin injury since the opening leg of the quarterfinals against Barcelona, but now he seems to be fit and ready to go. I've been very impressed with him. I think he's been among Atletico's not only best players, but most versatile players. How big of a boost is this for Atletico to have him back for this series?
In many ways, he's kind of the consummate
Simeone
player, because he can do just about everything. He can defend as well as attack. He's got, as they say, a great engine. I think when Turan was playing in Turkey, I think maybe there was a little bit of question mark over him, as there is with other Turkish players, is how well would they travel? And the reality is he's travelled very, very well. So to have him come back in a squad that, when you look at it, if Atletico had hit a series of injuries, then you know the depth of squad perhaps isn't there like you'd see it, particularly maybe a Real Madrid or even to some extent a Chelsea, no matter what Mourinho says about the squad he's got. So to have him back and almost have a full squad available is a big boost. He's a bit of a he's one of the kind of poster boys, I would suggest, for Simeone and Atleti.
Chelsea's going to be without Eden Hazard and Samuel Eto'o for the first leg through injury. Eto'o has a minor knee irritation, and Hazard is, I think it's a calf injury. How badly does this hurt Chelsea? And in light of this, does this possibly open the door for Torres to get a start?
It might do, but you never quite know what's in Mourinho's mind. He went with Schürrle. It was interesting, Johnny, because you know the Schürrle move in the first leg against PSG, the fact that Chelsea lost 3-1, the Schürrle move starting him as whether you call it a false nine or a withdrawn striker, was quite widely criticised, and a lot of people said, oh, look, PSG won 3-1, and here's one of the reasons Schürrle started up front. The reality is that Chelsea actually played a lot better when Schürrle was up front than after he left the game. Because it was only once he left the game that PSG actually began to get their noses in front and began to dominate that game. So knowing some of the stunts that Mourinho has pulled in the past, I don't think we should automatically think that gamble with Schürrle or that that move with Schürrle might not happen again. Samuel Eto'o has, based on the fact he's picked up on a free transfer and they're just paying his wages, has not been a bad investment. Although, as I understand it, all these goals this year have come at Stamford Bridge, so he hasn't played particularly well away from home. I guess if you're looking for to give Torres a boost, maybe this is a place to give him another opportunity. But also, you could also, I guess, argue the other side of it, which is that maybe, given his fragility as far as where his head is, it could just as well backfire.
We're talking to noted soccer pundit Bobby McMahon here on the Soccer Central podcast. Bobby, Bayern has stumbled as of late in the Bundesliga, although they won on the weekend. But, I mean, should we be reading anything into this? I mean, it's, I guess it's looked like this is just a bit of a hangover from, wrapping up the Bundesliga pretty quickly.
I don't want to be flippant about this, John, but I get the impression with Guardiola and Bayern Munich that they're almost kind of intentionally making things difficult for themselves. It's almost like, okay, we could probably beat that team 5-0, but do you think we could beat them maybe 3 or 4-0 if we didn't kick it with our left foot? Or, any goal we've got to score has got to go through 5 players before it counts. I think Guardiola's really kind of trying to keep this fresh. Like his approach against Manchester United, where he basically played Alaba and Philip Lahm in the midfield instead of fullbacks, and played without fullbacks for much of the game, was just sort of another indication of that. It's been so easy for Bayern Munich this year that I think that from a coach's point of view must be quite difficult to try and make sure complacency doesn't kick in. The one area I think Bayern Munich are susceptible to or perhaps guilty of is they're not as quite as efficient. They're not nearly as efficient as they should be in terms of converting the chances they make into goals. You look at the record compared to, say, Real Madrid this year, and their efficiency just isn't there. And that's maybe the one area that teams, when they play Bayern Munich, maybe you look at and feel that they've got a kind of chance. You saw it, I think, with Manchester United against them, and also Arsenal as well. Bayern Munich, over the 4 games against the 2 English clubs, missed some very, very good chances. And I think I guess when you get down to it, that's probably why Lewandowski is going there next year.
Is there, we talked about sort of potential hangovers in Real coming off a big win in last week's Copa del Rey final for Barcelona. Is there any fear of a letdown here after beating their Catalan rivals?
I honestly don't think so, because I think as much as it was, obviously they want to beat Barcelona and they want to pick up silverware, the Copa del Rey is still in the bigger scheme of things compared with La Liga and compared with the Champions League is very much regarded as the minor trophy. And the one trophy that sits out there as far as Real Madrid and Real Madrid fans are concerned is getting that 10th Champions League. So right. I think that's probably, the cup win is probably regarded as almost like the pre-game show for them. And now they're really getting down to business. They've lost so many semi-finals over the last few years. There was a time there where they were struggling to get past the last 16. Now the hurdle that's causing them so much problem is the semi-final, and not find themselves up against another German team third time this year, and following on Borussia Dortmund last year in the semi-final and Bayern Munich in the semi-final the year before.
Gareth Bale, of course, kind of the talk of the world right now after that goal he scored against Barcelona. Starting to come into his own, I think, especially since the start of January. What have you made of his time in Real Madrid? Has he sort of lived up to expectations, do you think?
I don't know how you feel about it, John. I find, you know, this is one of the most difficult things when you're asked to comment on players and teams, is really stripping away the hype. Because if you read some of the stuff coming out of Spain in terms of Gareth Bale, you would really think it was the second coming and not just, you know, another very good player. Because the bottom line is he's a brilliant player.
Sure.
He's an incredibly exciting player. But to try and keep that kind of balance where you're getting this constant hype and the Real Madrid kind of star machine is kicking into high gear at every opportunity, trying to make the most of sometimes good plays, but not absolutely, you know, brilliant plays, is very hard to keep that balance. But when you consider first year, and I think that's one of the things that is always underestimated and tends to be sort of poo-pooed and ignored a little bit, is how difficult it is for players to acclimatise and get used to that first year.
Absolutely. I would agree.
Yeah, so I think, you know, based on his performance this year, I think the answer I come to is it's only going to get better.
Right. It's interesting. I think you're right about the hype. I mean, especially, you know, when you play for Real or Barcelona, because, you know, they have dedicated sports newspapers in those two cities who are, you know, they're essentially house organs for those teams.
Yeah.
So they're always hyping up the players. And I would agree with you. I mean, I think Bale is a wonderful player, but I think all of this sort of attention that he's getting is a little bit much.
Yeah, the reporting for Real Madrid and Barcelona, I always think, is what it must have been like living in Moscow in the 50s under Joseph Stalin.
Yeah, it's a bit much. Bobby, before we let you go, maybe you can tell our listeners where they can check out some of your very fine work.
Usually up on Forbes.com on Monday, and just this Monday, focus on actually the Mourinho Chelsea Atletico Madrid Simeone battle coming up. That's a feature article this year, and you can follow me on Twitter at Bobby Soccer Rep, and usually see and hear me on Mondays and Thursdays at Soccer Central.
That's right, and when you do appear on Soccer Central, we usually put up the video as well. So if you miss some on the show, you can always go to Sportsnet.ca and watch the video. Thanks so much for joining us, Bobby. We really appreciate it, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks very much, John. Great to be on.
Cheers.
Thank you.
I'm pleased to be joined now by James Sharman, host of the Soccer Central television show here on Sportsnet. Sharms, what's going on?
You know, not much. Another typical weekend in the world of English football, huh? No storylines?
I was going to say we're going to be really struggling for something to talk about today.
Wow.
Well, listen, I guess the place to start is with David Moyes. A number of reports coming out of England today stating that Manchester United is about to sack their manager. If true, surprised that he didn't last the year?
You know, with the Glazers, can you be surprised about anything, really? I think it's ridiculous. I think it's nonsensical. I also believe that it's probably going to happen, and if not before the end of the season, then this summer, simply because, you know, you have some pretty well-known sports sections and journalists reporting this all at the same time, from The Guardian to, you know, The Telegraph, The Independent, ESPN. Clearly someone somewhere has dropped a little leak here. Be it from United or be it from the Moyes camp to prepare us for this. And it seems as if it's going to happen. Listen, we know it's been a terrible campaign by their standards. We knew it would be a challenging campaign anyway, entering this. But you look at the whole background of this situation and what happened with Fergie retiring and then him being allowed to pick a successor, which to begin with really was a huge gamble. And, you know, I'm not sure it's the smartest, you know, move in the world, but he picked David Moyes, and I think because of that, you had to back him, and they should back him, and they need to give him another transfer window. I think it's just ludicrous what they're doing to this guy. They give him a 6-year contract, and, you know, they finally face an adversity for the first time in 27 years, and they just knee-jerk, and they're going to fire the guy. I think it's ridiculous. I think he deserves a bit longer to right this ship. We knew entering this campaign that, you know, they needed goals from RVP. Well, guess what? RVP was hurt all season. goals didn't come, and if you reduce those goals from last year's total, they wouldn't be winning any championships. So that's one hole. You got the Asian defense, which we're going to all leave this summer anyway. This would be the summer to rebuild, not last summer. And doing this, to me, is just completely jumping the gun, and it makes them look like absolute amateurs.
Well, I guess I'm surprised because of the Sir Alex Ferguson factor. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I think...
Yeah.
The fact that they're cutting loose with Moyes so soon, it's a pretty public admission that they got this wrong.
Yeah,
in that draft. And so that's why, like, the timing of this really surprises me.
It looks really bad on Fergie, doesn't
yeah.
it? You know, at this point. And, you know, he should never have agreed to naming his successor. He should have just said, okay, I'm going to retire. I'm going to walk away. Now, you know, here's the keys to the ship. You know, you take care of business. Do what you think's right. Because this is always a huge gamble. And you're right. I mean, we know what he meant to this club this time last year. And he has this huge public figure and obviously a huge part of that club, you know, behind closed doors and within ownership circles. And maybe after a few months, he's been away a little bit. You know, he's not as involved. His presence isn't as overbearing as it once was. And they can now say, oh, yeah, well, maybe you're not that important after all. And we'll cut loose with your choice. I think it just looks really bad in him. It looks bad in them. And I think the guy I feel sorry for here is actually David Moyes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's interesting, too, because, I mean, I remember sort of reading books and in history about this, about, you know, when Shankly left, they kind of had a hard time kind of keeping him out, right?
Right.
And that Paisley really wanted to sort of take over and not sort of be. And eventually they just told Shankly pretty bluntly, look, leave the guy alone. Let him get on with it. So I wonder if United really has to kind of, you know, be blunt about this and say, look, Sir Alex Ferguson, we appreciate everything, but it doesn't help you having you here and having your fingerprints still on this team.
Well, and who knows, you know, how much say he has, though, you know, behind closed doors. We see him in the stands most games, don't we? I know he's taken up a new job coming up at Harvard, actually, teaching a sports business program. So maybe he'll be a little bit more absent from the games, but... It's obviously having that guy looking down on the game is always going to be an issue, but that's his right to go and watch games and watch matches, surely, you know?
Right.
And just you hope that he wasn't that involved behind the scenes, and I don't think he probably was. I really don't. I think, you know, Moyes is his own man. And if you look at what Moyes did from a transfer standpoint, he brought in Fellaini, which at the time most people thought, okay, you know, he's a pretty good player. He knows him. And he could be what this team needs. It wasn't really criticized. Maybe the price tag was, but it wasn't criticized too much. He brought in Mata in January, and I think Mata's played very well. And I think Mata with a full season at United would be a huge success. And like I mentioned, there'd be some deadwood moving out this summer. So he'd done some decent things. But I guess the record's the record, right? 11 losses in the campaign. I mean, that's, you know, that is so un-United-like. But every team goes through this. I guess it's just modern sports, isn't it? You know, there's no patience. You can't grow with a team or grow with a manager. It's like, we want results right now.
Hindsight is a wonderful thing, but I do wonder if he should have been hired in the first place. And that's no disrespect to Moyes, because I do think he is a good manager, but I always question whether he had the, I don't know, gravitas, for lack of a better word, to take over a team like Man United.
Yeah. I mean, I like Moyes too. I think he's a very good manager, and I think he could be a success at Manchester United. But, you know, when the rumours began circling about Fergie's future, I think, I mean, we all agreed, I mean, I certainly wrote on this, that you've got to find someone with the ego to be able to replace Ferguson. And for me, there's just one man for that job, and that was Jose Mourinho.
Right?
And when they didn't get him, well, who's left, really? And that might be the biggest indictment on Fergie, if it was indeed Fergie who chose not to sign Jose Mourinho. Because if you read between the lines some of Jose's comments last year, he was waiting for that job. He wanted that job, and he would have taken it in a heartbeat. And in the end, he didn't get it, and he took Chelsea, and he's going to be there for a long time now. But you know, if that was the case, and you could have got yourself Jose Mourinho, that to me is the biggest indictment on that ownership group for not doing that.
Right. Who replaces Moyes?
Great question.
I was thinking about it today, and the name that, and I kind of threw this out on Twitter, and the name that most often comes back is Jurgen Klopp, but he's tied to Dortmund until 2018.
Yeah.
Contracts are broken all the time, so I guess that's a possibility, but is he a good fit? And if not, then who else do you could see would kind of step in Moyes' shoes now?
Well, I'm sure Shinji Kagawa would enjoy it. It's funny, get some games under Jurgen Klopp. Listen, I think he'll be a success wherever he goes if he leaves Dortmund, and I think he has got the attitude, and he's a big enough personality that he could succeed in that hotbed of a stadium. Is he a proven success internationally, you know, in Europe? It's hard to say. He's won the Bundesliga in a league that has Bayern Munich in it, you know.
Right.
Speaks for itself. He did a great job last year. I think it'd be a success, yeah. But I'm not sure whether he wants to leave and whether he should leave, quite frankly. He's got a pretty nice setup there at Dortmund. I know they're going to mention Ryan Giggs' name. He's there. You know, he's waiting in the wings. That would be a massive gamble.
I can't see that happening.
Yeah. Well, could you have seen Moyes a year ago?
Well, that's true. But, I mean, I don't know. After sort of the Moyes sort of era, I mean, that would be a really big gamble, I think.
But do you want a guy that, I mean, are they looking for a guy to replace Ferguson, a guy that could potentially be there for, 10 years plus? Or are they going to find a more experienced guy to steady the ship and maybe mentor a Ryan Giggs type person? Do you go for a Louis van Gaal, for example, who wants to come to English football, apparently?
Right.
The rumors are he's going to Spurs, but if this job opens up, would he be a fit here? I think he'd be a fantastic choice, personally, on a short-term basis. And then maybe to mentor someone else, because throwing the star player in to this cauldron would be a massive mistake. And, we've seen Fergie's legacy hurt a little bit with this whole Moyes thing. If Giggs was given the job and it was a similar failure, how would his reputation, how would his legacy, be affected by this? So, yeah, that wouldn't be the right choice, but I wouldn't be surprised if they do it. I mean, listen, this is an ownership group that's shown themselves to be very, very naive.
It's interesting, too, because, obviously the big names are being linked, be it Guardiola or Klopp or I'm trying to think who else, Laurent Blanc. And I kind of threw this out on Twitter earlier today, too. I mean, one guy who I think it wouldn't be a sexy pick, but it would be, I think, a very interesting pick in terms of long term and taking the long view would be Rudy Garcia, who's for me has done a wonderful job at AS Roma.
Yeah, he has. Fantastic job. Look at the last few years at Roma and what they've been through, including last season. And it's pretty much the same team, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a lesser team at Roma this year than last year because they lost the likes of Lamella. In he comes and turns it around completely. It's a huge point swing this year to last year at Roma. He's done a wonderful job there. But, again, how familiar is he with English football? That's a question. And, he'd figure it out. I don't think he's a big enough name, though. I think one thing the Glazers want now, if they're going to ditch Moyes, they want a big name, proven guy. And as yet, Garcia, he won with Lille, didn't he, in France?
Right.
And he's going to finish second in the Serie A this year, so he hasn't won that much. Mm-hmm. But if you look at history, some of the best managers haven't won much prior to landing on their their big perch.
Well, it'll be interesting too, because if Arsenal decides to part ways with Wenger, then they have to compete with Arsenal for a coach too, because they'll be looking for a big name as well.
Oh,
so
maybe they'll sign Wenger.
Oh, wouldn't that be something?
Oh, please.
Wouldn't that be something?
Happen, but how be the best thing maybe ever to happen to the world of soccer? But that's not going to happen, is it?
No. But you get my point about...
Yeah, for sure. Big, big seats available at big clubs. That's a good point, actually. Klopp's the one that maybe just sits there and kind of stands out to me.
Right.
That if he wants to leave, that'd be a good pick. It's interesting hearing Pep Guardiola's comments last week at Bayern Munich. He was getting a little bit sick, I think, of some of the comments by some of those German and Bayern greats. Beckenbauer, of course, was very critical of the football he's coaching. And him saying, listen, if they want me to leave, just let me know. I'll shake their hand and say thank you, and that's it, I'll leave. I think he's a bit of gamesmanship there. I think he's going to be a buy-in for a while. But, boy, that's the guy, isn't it? If he had to replace him with anyone, and obviously Jose is off the scene now, he would be the guy. But why in the heck would he ever want to leave Bayern Munich at this point for that situation?
Right.
I mean, my word. Talk about two teams going in different directions.
We're talking to noted soccer pundit James Sharman here on the Soccer Central podcast. Let's move away from Man United. Liverpool with a big win over Norwich to extend their lead over Chelsea to 5 points. The Reds host the Blues at Anfield this weekend. Are they going to pull this off?
I still can't say that.
I want to get you to admit that they're going to win the title, but I can't pry that out of you.
I'll say this. I tweeted it out on the weekend. I said, back in August, if you told me that would be here in April and they've cemented a top four place, I would have been, beyond ecstatic for that.
Oh, sure.
If that's all they get now, I'll be very
disappointed.
Yeah. This is their chance, with Chelsea losing this weekend, incredibly losing to Sunderland. I mean, what an opportunity it is now that allows them to have one slip up and still potentially win this thing. The goal differential is pretty tight with Man City right now. Of course, City are playing West Brom. It's theirs to lose. It's as simple as that. It is theirs to lose, and the way they're playing. This game of the weekend was, and similar game to Sunderland a few weeks ago, where they played pretty well, but the Black Cats came strong at them, as did Norwich in this game, and it's a bit nervy there towards the end. But whereas previous Reds teams in recent years would have crumbled and conceded that goal, they didn't. You know, that they were resolute and they defended well, and they got the 3 points. So they're showing a real spine. And also, you know, this was a game this weekend for the first time in a while. They faced some adversity with no Sturridge and no Henderson, and they still look pretty good. Other players stepped up, you know, namely Raheem Sterling. So, yeah, this is it. You know, even with a couple of players missing, they're showing they actually have got perhaps more depth than we thought they might have. And there's three games left. You know, 5 points, that's a lot. So I'm not saying it yet, JMO, but I would be very disappointed if they don't win it now.
Well, I would think if a draw on Sunday, I would think that's enough.
Oh, yeah, a draw would be a great result, yeah. And but you wonder, you know, would Chelsea, are they going to rest players? You know, it's right in the middle of the Atletico match. You know, it's not going to be your typical Chelsea you're playing on Sunday. So, you know, 3 points might be very available here. But, yeah, a point would be more than enough. Then you've got that trip to Palace. And that's going to be a real tough one. And who'd have thought we'd be saying that, you know, at the beginning of the season?
That's right.
They are a really good team, but they may well have qualified already for the Premier League next season, you know, by that point. So perhaps the desperation's off Palace. And then it's Newcastle at home, end of the season. You know, that's a gimme
these days.
You know, so, yeah. Ask me in a couple of weeks whether they're going to do it.
Chelsea's unbeaten run at Stamford Bridge ends at 77 games following a 2-1 loss to Sunderland, of all teams. Afterwards, we were all treated to a classic Mourinho rant where he blamed the refs and everything else. What did you make of his diatribe there?
Well, quite frankly, I mean, he's got a point, right? It wasn't a penalty. It really wasn't.
Well, sure, but I mean, I don't know. It's a bit much, though, didn't you think? Because he's talking about, oh, they don't want us to win the league. And,
he's putting us against them, you know. It's like a kind of trench mentality he's trying to put together here. And it's crap. Of course it is. But, you know, they've had enough breaks over the years. Many a break, you know, when they won the championship.
Right, exactly.
But, you know, listen, I know he's congratulating the officials, but it was a bad call. And you can look back on this season, and, you know, if that is the game that in the end, you know, kind of, you know, either crowns Liverpool or relegates Chelsea to second or third place, then they can look at that call. But over the course of a campaign, it goes both ways. It really does.
Well, exactly.
What do we expect from Mourinho? I mean, he just come on and said, yeah, congrats, Sunderland, and walked away. We've been disappointed, right? He's got to say something. I thought it actually was quite controlled, really.
Well, but I'm not sure if he's giving enough credit to Sunderland here, because although, you know, they were far from playing champagne football, but I mean, they held their own at Stamford Bridge of all places.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
They're playing desperate football right now.
Right.
Absolutely. But, you know, I mean, yeah, it's a good point. I think his own team didn't play well enough either. I mean,
that's
the fact is,
exactly.
It's 1-1 in the 82nd minute against Sunderland in a game you've got to win. Something's gone wrong there, right?
Right.
Have you got one eye now on Atletico, which is possible, I suppose. But, you know, he's like this pot of water, you know, boiling over on the stove, isn't he? And he just wants to, he needs a striker so badly. He knows it, you know. He's got Sammy Eto's, you know, he can trust to a certain point. And he's got Demba Ba, who's scoring in the Champions League. And then you've got Fernando Torres. You know, that's a team that, given their striking woes, it's quite amazing they're actually doing as well as they are doing, because they've got no one that scores regularly for them up front.
Right.
No one at all. And he's been making light of it all season long. But now I think it's just sick and tired of it. He really is. And I'm not sure what Bobby said before this, but you know, I'm sure he looks at Atletico as a team that he must really respect.
Oh, absolutely.
And like in his own vision, right, a nasty, tenacious, defensive team with that ruthless attacker up front, you know, in Diego Costa, who might be wearing Chelsea colours next year.
Very
right?
Well could be, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm sure he's just getting really in a very, very angry mood at this point, given that result. Should have been 3 points, and they should have done that with about, you know, 50% effort.
Right. Arsenal firmly in fourth after a 3-0 win away to Hull, with a Gunners board by the return of Aaron Ramsey and Mesut Ozil. A bit of a revival going on under Wenger now.
Yeah, seriously. Enough to get a 3-year contract, maybe? Who knows?
Well, I don't know about that, but...
But, you know, I'll tell you, Jamie, obviously you follow this team closer than I do, but as much as we can criticize Wenger for numerous things, right, if you look at that injury list on that team this season, they have been just crippled.
Sure.
And not just, you know, squad players, like star players from, you know, Walcott, Wilshere, Ozil, obviously Ramsey's first start in 2014. He was the story of Arsenal in late last year. He was the best player. And it's his first start in 2014 this past weekend. So if you took away arguably three of the best four players of any team in this league, they would struggle. Simple as that. And Arsenal struggled, you know, without these guys. But now they're slowly getting back healthy again. They're playing better football. My question would be, you know, you sign these China dolls, right? And that's your own fault. You know what the history is going in. From Walcott's been injured for years. Wilshere's been injured for years. Ozil's first attempt in the Premier League is a bit beaten up now as well. You know, Ramsey's history, you know, an injury front's been there for years as well. You know, maybe it's time to start buying some steel, some guys that you know are going to give you 35 games a year. Because, you know, to me, if those guys were all healthy this season and didn't get hurt, then they'd be competing for the championship at this point.
Well, and the other point, and I've made this point before, is I think Wenger did a very poor job of managing Ozil's minutes early on, right? Because he was just playing him every game and running him into the ground, and eventually, you know, lost a bit of form, lost confidence, and you know, picked up injuries. So, you know, with all the sort of injury problems that he had, I get that he had to sort of possibly rely on Ozil a little bit more than he should have, but still, I thought he had to have managed the way, you know, his minutes much better.
Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah, especially, you know, the new league and you throw them into the Wolves. But they lost Podolski early as well too, right?
Yep.
So they were lacking, and the depth obviously isn't quite there from a quality standpoint. But yeah, I know what you're saying, and Ozil will be, you know, well aware of what to expect next year. What are your thoughts on Olivier Giroud? Because I'm so torn on this guy. He has all the tools. He's got 14 goals this year, but you know, 1 minute he's showing, he's what, 6'3", 6'4". He's like an ox out there, you know, and he's showing his strength. The next minute he's going to ground so easily. I just don't know what to make of him.
I think it's the inconsistency that bothers me. I think he's just a bit streaky, and if he can be more consistent for the duration of a season, you know, like game in and game out, not just maybe necessarily score, but kind of, you know, link play more and bring in teammates. If he could do that, then I'd probably have a little bit more time for him. But it just seems to me that he, you know, he'll go through a run of games where he's very good, and then again, run of games where he's pretty pedestrian out there.
Yeah, to me, he's a good second striker, right?
Exactly.
He shouldn't
right.
be the guy you're leaning on
no.
for all the goals. And he could play, I mean, I think he holds the ball out very well.
Very well.
And, you know, if he had, I know, obviously, they went for Suarez last year. Can you imagine Suarez playing off him, right? That would work really well.
Right.
You know, so obviously they won't get Suarez now, at least you wouldn't think.
Well, I wouldn't think.
But, you know, someone, you know, of similar ilk, maybe, if they're going to throw some money at some players. Of course, depending on who's managing, of course.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, that team isn't far away. And he'll say it at the end of the season, we're not far away. And no Gunners fans are just, like, wretch when they hear that, because he says it every single year. But I really think that team is probably a couple of players away from and a bit of good fortune on the injury front from being a real force.
Well, we'll see. Sharms, what's before we let you go, tell us what's coming up this week on Soccer Central Television.
Well, obviously Champions League week, so we'll be covering that in depth. Bobby's with us on today's show, so you can have double hit whammy of Bobby, you know, on the podcast and now on this show, and we'll be talking about David Moyes in depth with him, and also maybe we'll ask him if he thinks Liverpool will win or won't win. So yeah, as usual, a busy week. 7 p.m. Eastern on Sportsnet World.
And the Roundtable show on Friday, right?
Yeah, that's right. Not sure who's on it this week, but on Friday, yeah.
You're slacking off again. Get those guests lined up.
I know. Well, you know, got to just see what the topics are, you know, who fits in. We've got a nice little pool of talent now, actually, we can draw from. So one of these days we'll get you in there, JMO.
That's right. But I'm not wearing a suit, so don't count.
Don't worry. I wouldn't expect it.
Good. Good stuff, Sharms, and we'll talk soon, okay, buddy?
All right, mate. Thanks, Bo.
Cheers.
Bye.
Just a reminder that you can watch both of this week's UEFA Champions League matches live on Sportsnet. On Tuesday at 2:30 p.m. Eastern, it's Atletico Madrid versus Chelsea on Sportsnet and Sportsnet World. And on Wednesday at 2:30 Eastern, watch Real Madrid versus Bayern Munich on Sportsnet and Sportsnet World. Also on Thursday, we'll be airing both UEFA Europa League semifinals, Benfica versus Juventus on Sportsnet and Sevilla versus Valencia on Sportsnet World. Both games kick off at 3 p.m. And a reminder, I'll be back hosting another edition of the Soccer Central radio show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan on Thursday night. If you can't listen live, you can always download the show from the podcast page and from iTunes. Okay, guys, that's another edition of the Soccer Central podcast in the books. I'll return next Monday with another edition of the show. Until then, cheers for listening.